Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. I'm Maya Williams. Several small cities in LA County lead the state in civil forfeiture. That's when police confiscate property from people suspected of crimes. Taylor Haney has more.
When purse strings are tightened, it looks like some LA County police departments take residents' property to balance the budget. The report comes today from the Drug Policy Alliance, a group that opposes the practice. California outlawed this kind of forfeiture years ago.
And I found that these practices, while forbidden, are happening on a regular basis and apparently with no consequence.
The report's author, Jonah Engel, says local law enforcement is sidestepping those reforms, following looser federal laws instead.
8 of the top 10 cities are located in LA County.
Take the city of Pomona. Its seized property exceeded that of Long Beach, Oakland, Fresno, and Bakersfield combined. And it looks like the expected cash flow from the practice was baked into the city budget. Proponents say forfeiture helps to fight drug trafficking. The Pomona Police Department and the city finance director declined comment. State Senator and South LA Rep. Holly Mitchell brought a bill to the floor today that would close the loophole. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
8 Los Angeles women will be fasting until the city council agrees to raise the minimum wage to $15.25. The group called LA Women for 15 formed on April 16th after Los Angeles joined cities rallying across the nation to increase the minimum wage. The women involved range from fast food employees to advocates. Elena Pop, a housing rights attorney who is fasting, says the raise is crucial.
There's talk about 2021, there's talk about 2019, that is absolutely unacceptable. Our deadline is now. Take a vote, make it happen, take responsibility now.
This is the 6th day the women are fasting outside city council chambers, but they intend to continue until the city increases the minimum wage. Mayor Eric Garcetti announced today during the State of the City address that the City of Los Angeles will be entering a partnership with the Google traffic app Waze. Emily May Jacor reports.
Garcetti hopes that this partnership will help create solutions to traffic management issues in LA. He says widespread usage by Angelenos will provide valuable data that should eventually help solve street congestion in the city.
But our city's tech will make the biggest difference if we put it directly into the hands of Angelenos. That is our ultimate force multiplier. Not 40,000 city employees who are an amazing team, but 4 million Angelenos who can be a part of improving our city with the smallest clicks and the smallest touches on their smartphones.
Waze is a GPS-based navigation program for smartphones. It essentially provides the same service as Google Maps, but factors in street traffic when offering route guidance. It's meant to increase safety on the roads. But some locals have complained that the app causes too many drivers to take residential streets, which is crowding their neighborhoods. Emily May Zakor, Annenberg Radio News.
During his 2008 presidential campaign, Obama promised the Armenian community that the atrocities committed in 1915 would be recognized as a genocide by the U.S. government. But White House officials said today the president will not be using the word genocide for Friday's commemoration of the massacre that killed millions of Armenians by the Ottoman government. Officials defended the decision as necessary to preserve cooperation with Turkey amid conflicts in the Middle East. Former American Apparel employees lined up in front of the store's downtown warehouse location to protest what they say is a surprise mass firing by the clothing store. Sarah Hansen reports.
American Apparel has been sued by workers after a violation of labor laws Easter weekend. The Wall Street American Apparel owners say workers need to be dumped. American Apparel management responded by saying, "No sweat," says a representative from Hermandad Mexicana.
What kind of company do you work for where you feel like you need to be afraid? Like you feel like you can't speak up for yourself? Like that's not right. Like
the WARN Act prohibits surprise mass firing by companies that have over 100 workers. And according to American Apparel, they employ over 10,000. Sarah Hansen, Annenberg Radio News.
Religious leaders gathered at the LA City Council today to celebrate religious diversity in Los Angeles. Sam Burgum has the story.
City Council member Mitchell Farrell supported the multi-faith resolution to make today the day of religious pluralism in Los Angeles.
So we felt it was appropriate through the Human Relations Commission from the city to have a day to honor all religions, especially as a backdrop of growing intolerance and darkness across the world.
Religious leaders spoke about the importance of accepting all faiths.
How good and how pleasant it is that brothers and sisters of all faiths and all religions and all creeds gather together.
We are all one people, members of the same human family. Pluralism means to recognize the unity in diversity.
I pray this day that here in this city, we have unity among all of us. For if we as the faith leaders cannot share unity, how can we expect our people to follow?
Sam Burgum, Annenberg Radio News.
LA Unified and other cafeterias that serve Bluebell foods are removing milk products like ice cream from their carts. Bluebell Creameries was forced to recall all of their products today due to listeria contamination. In a statement released Monday, the company said that FDA tests found traces of listeria, which may have been exposed to a wide range of products, like ice cream and frozen yogurt. The CDC says 10 listeria illnesses and 3 deaths are linked to Bluebell Foods. In the latest attempt to rebrand South Los Angeles, LA City Council President Herb Wesson proposed a motion today to rename the area SOLA. The acronym follows the trend of shortening neighborhoods, like North Hollywood to NoHo. We asked South LA residents and USC students what they think about the proposed name change.
SOLA, I'm not really sure. It kind of sounds weird. I really like South Central. I think that they should stick with that.
SOLA? SOLA. I think that naming it SOLA is like very nice consistency with WeHo, but on the other hand, I think that there's so much history behind South Central that, you know, renaming it SOLA would just kind of like ruin that history and not really represent it well.
So I don't think that calling it SOLA would be kind of like a good thing, because I don't think it would really roll off the tongue the way that WeHo does.
I love SOLA. Giving South LA a nickname like SOLA coincides with its socioeconomic reinvention.
Wesson would like more time for residents to comment on the new name before officially voting on the change. HBO's new Kurt Cobain documentary, Montage of Heck, will make its Los Angeles premiere tonight at the Egyptian Theater. The film made waves after its original premiere at the Sundance Film Festival in January. Director Brett Morgan claimed the doc is made up of 85% previously unseen material given to him by Cobain's widow, Courtney Love, and the Cobain family. Montage of Heck will premiere on HBO on May 4th. If you've ever wondered about the origins of curious words and phrases, here's Sarah Tiano with today's Root Source.
A really long time ago, Paracelsus, known as the father of toxicology, said everything is poison. There is poison in everything. The danger is in the dose. The word poison comes from the 12th century old French word poison or puisan, meaning a drink, or more specifically, a medical drink. Many recognizable poisons, like arsenic and cyanide, were used medicinally and only become harmful when ingested in large doses. Poison has long been considered the murder weapon of choice for women. Ladies traditionally had ample chance to slip in a little extra something while they were cooking and serving food.
He's been poisoned, you daft dimbo!
Murder by poison was pretty easy to get away with back in the days before analytic chemistry. But the most famous case is pretty fresh in our memories.
He poisoned my son, your king.
R.I.P. King Joffrey. R.I.P.
Tune in for next week's Root Source, where we find out the origin of the phrase balls to the wall. How can music change lives in the midst of war? Sandy Tolan is a veteran journalist and public radio reporter who teaches at USC's Annenberg School. His new book, Children of the Stone, follows a Palestinian boy who traded throwing stones for teaching music. He joined Amy Lopez to talk about it.
What is the book about exactly?
Well, the book is about the dream of one young man, a Palestinian musician who plays the viola, was trained in France, grew up in a refugee camp in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. on his dream to build a music school for Palestinian children. And there was a poster of him all over town of this 8-year-old boy throwing a stone. This was during the first Palestinian intifada or uprising, where many of the so-called children of the stones were trying to expel the Israeli army, which was occupying the West Bank and Gaza at the time. And that poster that was all around Ramallah also had another picture. It was a picture of an 18-year-old playing the viola, and it was the same guy. His name was Ramzi Abu Ridwan. And I was working on something else, what became my book, The Lemon Tree. But this poster just so captured my attention. I got to meet this guy. So I went to the refugee camp and sat with him and met him and did a long piece for NPR back in 1998. And as part of that piece, he said, you know, my dream is to build music schools for the children of Palestine so they know there's something besides war. And I lost track of him after a couple of years. And by coincidence, I ran into him in an Italian restaurant in the West Bank in Ramallah. And I didn't recognize him because he'd grown a beard. And he pointed to himself and he said, Sandy, it's Ramzi. And I said, Ramzi, what are you doing here? And he said, oh, I've opened up a music school for the children of Palestine. And, you know, I got chills because here was this now 28-year-old or 30-year-old man who did exactly what the 18-year-old man-child said he wanted to do. That became the beginning of my journey. That started in December 2009, and now almost 5.5 years later, the book has finally come out.
You mentioned The Lemon Tree,
yes,
your previous book, and that also deals with young men around the same geological location. But what inspires you to focus on that in your books?
Well, you know, to me, like the most attractive thing about being a journalist is that you can find incredible stories, you know, and the stories that drive us. In The Lemon Tree, it was the history of two young people at the time that they met. They were young people in 1967, one Palestinian, one Israeli, whose common history was the same house. And they met at the doorstep to that house. And through those two people and their two families, you could tell a larger story about their two peoples. To me, it's where you can find the human story that brings to light the larger issue. And if we just deal with a larger issue and make arguments about it and cite graphs and statistics and studies, well, that can be important. But if you don't engage people with human stories that we can care about and with people we can care about, then you don't actually have a chance to sort of make people feel and care and maybe change their point of view about what's going on, because the person that seemed to be an enemy, you realize, is a complex person whose livelihood you actually end up caring about, hopefully, if you can tell the story well.
Would you say that your writing process for writing an article to writing a book is different, or do you think that the process is sort of the same?
Yeah, I think it is different. If nothing else, crafting a story that is going to take place over time, and not only just over time in terms of years that the book covers, but also over a span of time that you take to write it. I mean, I worked on this book for 4.5 years, and the writing part was at least half of that. In that way, when you're writing an article, you know, it's just everything's much more compact. You still have to have the same dedication to the facts and accuracy and fairness. But you don't have to have reams of documents. And like, you know, in Children of the Stone, there's more than 100 pages of source notes. And it was exhausting at times because, especially on this issue, really as a journalist and somebody who teaches journalism really on any issue, but Israel and Palestine as a subject that people feel very, very passionate about. So you have to be very careful to be as accurate as possible. And that's why in some cases I put more source notes than in the original text, you know, in some sections.
Thank you so much, Professor Tolan, for your time.
Amy, nice to meet you, and thank you very much.
Tolan will discuss his book tonight at the LA Public Library with NPR's Kelly McEvers as part of the library's Aloud series. That's it for today. We had help today from Kim Loeffler, Kevin McAllister, and Caitlin Plummer. Our board operator is Derek Renfro. Holly Thompson is newscast producer. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Maya Williams.